7:30 tonight at Weill Hall. Juan will be speaking on Thursday and Friday here in New York City at the CUNY Grad Center at the Latinx Freedom Conference. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for our development associate position. Go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Rectangular, rapid-flashing beacons are warning devices at pedestrian crossings. Maintaining safety at these crossings is the responsibility of both pedestrians and drivers. Be watchful when you see a pedestrian beacon and look for approaching pedestrians, even when the lights are dark. A pedestrian should push the button to activate the signal. When the lights begin flashing, indicate you intend to cross by carefully stepping into the crosswalk. The flashing lights are meant to catch a motorist's attention. When you see them, it means a pedestrian is trying to cross. Be prepared to yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. Allow pedestrians to completely cross the road, whether or not the lights are still flashing. When pedestrians and motorists follow the rules of the road, everyone can stay safe.
Ain't that the truth? It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's, again, 6 o'clock, more like 30 seconds after 6 o'clock, on a Tuesday night, time for another edition of Off the Wall. Oh, yeah. We are in with a vengeance. for another edition of Off the Wall here on WUSB. This is Manuel Goldstein, joined by Kyle.
Yes.
Good. We're testing out levels, so if it's not a little uncertain, that's why. Am I good? Good levels?
Pretty good.
Okay.
You could go a little higher.
Go a little higher. I'll go a little higher. I'll go up there.
How's okay, that's fine.
Is that fine? Okay. See, that's a lot quicker than us throwing hand symbols and things at each other.
Actually, that's like perfect. That's like
perfect?
Right where it should be.
I won't move from this position.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. Oh, forgot to prepare a show because we were working on the levels. But I can say...
I'm just so glad your microphone's not broken from last week.
Well, yeah, we had a bit of an accident.
I almost went online and like started shopping for a new microphone.
That thing on the other show. On the other show, we had a little accident with the microphone. Go listen to it if you're so inclined.
Good recovery though. I think you saved it the last minute from crashing all over the board.
Yeah, yeah, and breaking some other things as well.
I think I'm gonna get a C stand so that it's just not on the table anymore because it's just too flimsy. It's like a lamp.
If you have it suspended from the ceiling, that's how
what you want.
Professionals do it that way.
You want like some garage door springs. And
I've never seen one, but I'm told that's how it works.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. All right. You know what? Contraptions are what we do here at WUSB.
Yes, the most dangerous station, at least on Long Island, but probably in the nation. And you can support WUSB because it's our radiothon. And, you know, we're trying to raise a measly 20 grand. That's it for the entire month. And you can help by maybe pledging one of those grand or, you know, pledging 10 of those bucks or whatever, you know, whatever you can afford. Go to WUSB.fm. You'll see a pledge button. Go to the pledge button and fill it out. You can become a monthly contributor. You can become a one-time contributor. You can contribute a small amount, a big amount, whatever you can afford. It keeps WUSB going. And we are a non-commercial station. We never have commercials. We have all kinds of diverse, different opinions and all sorts of music that you don't hear anyplace else. And if that means something to you, and I think it should, well then, you should pledge. I really believe so. Many of us who work here at the station also pledge, which, you know, when you think about it, we don't get paid for all the work we do. We don't want to because it's something we love doing. But in addition, we pledge to support the place because we believe in it, and we hope our listeners believe in it as well. And you can be from anywhere. You can be from down the block. You can be from the other side of the globe. Yeah. Everybody can reach WUSB.fm. And, quite a week, huh, Kyle?
Incredible week. I mean, just so many contrasting things, and I think it goes well. I mean, I always speak to the weather. It's such a pedestrian thing to do, right? Yes, but it's kind of cold, but also bright and beautiful this Easter weekend, and I think people are hopeful, even amidst all kinds of calamity and just a unending pace of things, but. There's this whole thing of exploration, too.
Yeah, this whole week is a week of contrast, because there are two big stories that we're going to get into. One is awesome. One is terrible. Which do we do first? Let's do the awesome first, because Kyle hinted at it. Exploration. And, of course, you know, we're talking about the mission to the moon, which we've been transfixed by. Since last Wednesday when Artemis II took off. And it's been going ever since, all the way up to the moon and around and back. And but not just that. It was, I guess, the humanity that was attached to it that really made it special. Because if you tuned in, and you can tune in on YouTube, just find the NASA channel, and you'll see a couple of feeds. And you can watch it 24 hours, no Google commercials, so you can just leave it on and hear the sound of astronauts in the background and mission control and all that. I don't know. I was just completely amazed and blown away by the whole thing as far as seeing it step by step, you know, as far as one thing after another. I don't know. What do you think, Kyle?
I'm sorry,
your microphone was off. I pressed the wrong button. Go ahead.
It is to speak and have your voice cut off. The whole thing is referencing a lot of history, but it's also making history. So there's your contrast right there in that particular story. And a lot of reverence for it,
mm-hmm.
for explorers that have gone before, and for the new vantage and territory being brought back to everybody on Earth to share. And, the mission itself being called integrity. I mean, I think things that have integrity, things that have stood the test of time, that are our history, the parts that we're proud of, that we look back on.
I got to step in, though, to correct you on one thing. The mission is not called integrity.
I'm sorry.
The individual ship is called, there are a lot of names floating around, so I just want to make sure people are aware of the names, because I studied this right before going on the air. The ship is called, the actual vessel is called Integrity, and that's the case for this particular mission and no other. The model of the ship is called Orion, so they're riding in an Orion-class ship. That happens to be called Integrity, and it's part of the Artemis program, which is at number 2 right now. So hopefully that clears it up. I was very confused by that because they kept referring to it interchangeably, and it can get a little confusing. But you know, once you get into the spirit of it, it's really amazing. We were just watching a press conference right before showtime from NASA, and I got to say, it is so amazing to see a press conference from our government that is not contentious, that is not filled with accusations and finger pointing. I could mean that from both sides, but I really mean it from the side of the presenters, because they are so hostile to any kind of challenge. Not so with NASA. They're you know, into the science. It's all about science, embracing that. Their administrator, I don't know the guy's name, but I saw him a few days ago when the mission started, and right away he has to say something like, we're going to get the lunar lander on the moon before the end of President Trump's term. And why is that important? Why do you have to mention when it's going to happen as far as when a presidential term ends? It's like it's a requirement that you have to kiss ass at some point. He did that a few times. He didn't do it today, I'm happy to say. And I think the guy is actually somebody who is into space. I hope so. You know, just like, what's his name, Sean Duffy. I think he's actually into trains, the transportation secretary. But there's this requirement that you have to butter up Trump if you want to stay on his good side or keep your job or have your department funded. But, you know, if you want to look at the realism of the situation, Trump has cut 50% of the science budget of NASA, or at least he wants to do that. I'm not sure if Congress is going to go along with it, but they go along with just about everything he says. So he's no friend of space exploration, NASA, science, any of that. You got to kiss ass at some point. I get that. But let's not let it dominate. And, I at least with NASA, I feel like it's not dominating too much, because we were just so captivated by watching these four individuals in this tiny capsule basically interact and face challenges and just experience the wonder of it all. You know, being able to see parts of the moon that have never been seen by humans before. Because, you know, it wasn't lit up when the last time somebody flew on that side, or they didn't actually see that particular part of it. And then looking up, seeing the moon yourself, realizing, wow, there's people out there going further than any humans have ever gone before, because they're going further around the dark side of the moon, or the far side of the moon, actually, is the right way to phrase it. Yesterday was the big day where they looped around. They were cut off for about 40 minutes. Everybody knew that was coming, and then, you know, there they are again after they emerged. When you think about what we are capable of doing, you know, sending people up in this rocket and using the laws of gravity to propel them to this other celestial body and loop around it and use its gravitational force to push it back towards Earth. I heard it said if they don't do another thing, if they don't fire a rocket at all, it's still going to make it back to Earth. You know, that's how physics works. And it's just really incredible to me to see, you know, to see it all play out like that, to see the hard work of all the people. And when you see the people at NASA, you realize, wow, these are kindred spirits. These are science geeks. These are the people that, you know, spend endless hours just pursuing things that other people think is a waste of time. And it's just great to see celebration of incredible accomplishments and to see what mankind can do. You know, if we devote time to that instead of something destructive and contentious, I think this is something that can really unite so many of us. Now, yeah, there's, of course, arguments about spending money elsewhere. But before we make those arguments with regard to NASA, let's make those arguments with regard to military budgets and all kinds of other things where orders of magnitude more are wasted on nothing more than destructiveness and killing fellow humans. That's something I think maybe we should look at cutting first before we decide to go for science. Kyle, have you enjoyed watching this historic series of events? I mean, the last time we went to the moon was well before you were born. You know, I don't know why it took so long to get back there. 1972 was the last time. It's shocking. I hope we start to make up for it now.
Yeah, and I think the main thing for me is that it's a totally different vehicle than what I grew up with, which was the space shuttle. Although the engines, the rockets themselves, are powered by equipment from those vehicles, which is kind of neat. I like that. It's like retrofitting, and it's carrying a lot of that development through. And say what you will about this program or the way it was done, the amount of places in the country that contributed, that gets a lot of criticism. But when it goes off and works well, it really kind of inspires you about human collaboration and what can be accomplished when you test things and take that extra time. And I think it's several years past when they thought they'd be ready for this. I mean, we were watching some interviews, some old interviews, about when they were anticipating, but also willing to leave the schedule to some variability in the schedule. And I'm excited, I think, that it has worked well about the pace of it increasing and not having a long period of time between launches, and for these things to become something they can repeat and do regularly to get enough equipment and supplies to achieve the goals that are being talked about here. It just is. It should be that we're able to do this with more frequency and have the sorts of like communication ability and just access, I think, to other parts of our galaxy, however close or far away. Well, that's pretty cool.
This
and
is so close.
Futuristic.
This is the moon. This is our moon.
It's been written about. Uh-huh. It's been talked about. And, like, to actually see, again, that, like, human collaboration and ingenuity and everything coming together.
Yeah. Do you know the Canadian is on board is the first non-American to go to the moon? Whether landing or circling. That's amazing that nobody else has done that. Nobody else has been brought into the club. And I hope to see more such collaborations, because this is something the whole world needs to share. It should not be seen as a nationalistic thing at all. You know, our flag fell down on the moon I heard this, that when they took off to leave, basically the force of that knocked the flag over immediately. So I think that should tell you something about how the moon feels about flags.
Yeah, I also, I think it's, I'm aware, I think the colors itself, themselves have been, like, bleached away or, like...
Yeah, those colors did run. They
it's not...
It's like sheer white now.
Yeah, it's not able to withstand the environment, but perhaps we'll change that with other things there. But it's incredible also, like, you look at the detail in some of the photos of, like, how hostile it is, and you realize, wow, just trying to, like, build anything there is going to be incredibly difficult. So we're achieving and, like, surmounting certain challenges only to have a whole host of other challenges. And I think that just that leaves a lot of room for people to solve problems and think big and imagine ways to do things in different environments. I don't know. It's really, really interesting.
There are going to be problems. There are going to be setbacks. There are going to be tragedies, as with any form of exploration. We can't let that set us back, so much that we're afraid to take that next step. And it is, you know, this whole universe is staring us in the face. Do you think it's there just to mock us? No, that's a challenge. It's something that we have to figure out. There are so many things tied to the infinity of the universe that are just ripe for the picking.
And the facilities in space have got a lot of attention. I just think this is worth mentioning. But
no, we're going to talk about the toilet.
I'm
going to
say it. We're going to have fantastic facilities eventually, I think.
Or no facilities just, because it's too much of a pain.
You just realize how important it is. Just,
for those who don't know, they've had an inordinate amount of trouble with the toilet on board the ship. Let me point out that for the Apollo astronauts, by the way, Artemis is the twin of Apollo in Greek mythology. That's really cool. I didn't know that. But they didn't have a toilet at all. They had to do the Central Park thing with a dog, where you put everything in a plastic bag and hope somebody picks it up later. And they left it on the moon, too. They left excrement on the moon. So you'll find human... in fact, there's a theory that perhaps microbes could have actually developed in that period of time because, you know, they're very resilient. And water bears, they can exist in space. It's possible. And they don't know what's waiting for them when they come back to the moon. They don't, especially if they go back to that particular place. It'll be cool. And you can see it, though. You know, there have been ships that have taken pictures of where, I believe it's Apollo 11 landed, and they're able to see things that are still there. They can even see Neil Armstrong's footprints, if you can believe that. After 50 years, not much goes on the moon. There's not a whole lot of activity. There is some dust sometimes, but there's no atmosphere. There's no wind. But occasionally there's, you know, a meteorite that, plops down and causes a commotion.
I have no doubt we will find ways to leave more trash on the moon.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's likely. But it's interesting because the moon is considered a dead world, and yet because it is dead, it has so much history that is just there for you to trace, read, and just learn from. So that's really amazing.
But space survival requires all kinds of technologies and innovation and different things. And I know that we're going to get some of this stuff right and apply a lot of what we know to solve the sort of basic stuff so that people can do more.
Yeah, yeah. And no matter what you think about funding or priorities or things like that, you have to admit this is an incredible achievement, being able to send somebody up and circle the moon and come back. I know we've done it before, but now we're doing it again with vastly improved technology. Who knows what we're going to be capable of. The photography alone, wow, that is going to be something to look at those pictures. The cameras they brought up there, those are pretty good cameras, right, Kyle?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of the particular type of cameras that they use, and they've had a very long-standing relationship with NASA, and they modify them. They're using really high ISO so that they could do a lot of photography with lower light. And, yeah, it's just it's an amazing vantage to get a camera that far out and have a human operate it and capture things that they're seeing with their eyes.
Well, they took a picture of Earth, which was phenomenal, and then we found out that they took a picture of Earth in darkness. The sun wasn't shining on it. The moon was shining on it, and they got the entire a planet facing them, and it looked like it was daytime, but that was taken at night.
Yeah, it's that incredibly high film speed or simulated film speed that allows them to capture things that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to do with a regular camera. So I just think that that's so crucial in any kind of exploration. And for me, like, that is why photography is both an art and a science. And that's what I love about it.
And how cool is it that you can communicate with the astronauts a quarter of a million miles away, and there's no degradation of signal? You know, that is really convenient that space is like that, because imagine if it was, you know, the way it is here on Earth, where radio waves deteriorate after a certain, you know, amount of distance. But you can pretty much keep communicating, and you know, there'll be a delay as you get further and further away, but we're able to see what they're doing. We're able to talk to them. We're able to share these experiences. So our advice to you as listeners, don't cheat yourself out of this. This is something that has not happened in a long, long time, and it's happening right now. And if you listen in on the NASA channel, if you get the NASA channel, that's great. If you don't get it, you can either go to their website, nasa.gov, or on YouTube, the NASA channel has a bunch of different feeds. The mission feed is the one that has press conferences and various little films and things like that. The views feed simply has pictures. Sometimes they have audio feeds as well, but mostly they just have what it looks like looking out of the spaceship, which is pretty incredible, you know, in and of itself. At one point you saw the crescent Earth, you saw the moon, and you saw part of Integrity, part of the Orion space capsule, and you just realized that's everybody. They took a picture of everybody, the astronauts, the moon, of course, and everybody that is or has been on Earth, all in one shot, and that was just phenomenal. A lot of firsts, a lot of really jaw-dropping moments. It's just kind of cool to have that on in the background, hear them going back and forth, just hear how human they all are, and I think that's pretty amazing. One thing I noticed, so many more women running things at NASA, at Mission Control. I remember, you know, the Apollo missions. There was just nothing but, you know, these you know, old white guys you know, with Midwestern accents. And now it's so much more. And I think that's just great and amazing. And it adds something to the humanity. So living through history. All right, I put this off long enough. Now the bad part, the negative part of all this. I want to read you something. I want to read you a quote that was uttered today, earlier today, from our President Donald J. Trump. A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. This is what our president said to Iran, or about Iran, that a whole civilization will die tonight. He's basically threatening genocide. You know, whether or not this is serious on his behalf, you know, if you're the target of it, you kind of have to think of it as serious. But what the hell is going on here? This follows his obscenity-laden Truth Social post on Easter Sunday, where basically he's demanding that they reopen the Strait of Hormuz, something that he said he didn't care about, but apparently he does. And it's led to a number of people, including some that might surprise you, thinking that he has really lost his marbles this time and that we are all in very great danger if we don't do something about it. It's not just us anymore. It's not just people, you know, in the leftmost half of the spectrum. It's people on the right as well. It's people from all different perspectives and political bents. You see the way that he presents himself. You see the amount of knowledge that he does not have in the places that he is operating or basically sending troops into. It's no longer time to laugh. It's time to take action. It's time to do something. Now, Congress has the power. Actually, the cabinet has the power to take him out of office. And they absolutely should exercise that power because it's clear that he does not have the ability to do what he is doing. He can give rambling speeches and things like that and wander off topic and start talking about curtains and things like that. And he can also unleash all kinds of hell on innocent people. He can commit war crimes, or he can order war crimes be committed. Now, this falls on the military now. If the military follows through and starts doing what he's demanding, such as destroying bridges and power plants and things like that, they are committing war crimes. And they are the ones who will be held responsible for that. Now, you know, we can say, like Israel says, that the laws don't apply to us, that we're better, and that, the international accord is just a farce. You can only do that for so long before the rest of the world catches up and holds you to account. And we're getting to that stage. You know, it would have been nice if we could have avoided this, but it's definitely something that is getting more and more unpleasant by the day. Listen to this. Former GOP Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, never thought I'd see something like this. She suggested that Trump should be removed from office under the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution after he doubled down on his threat in the Post today that said a whole civilization will die tonight. I mean, think about the gravity of that statement from the President of the United States, arguably the most powerful person in the world, promising that a whole civilization will die tonight. He's been issuing increasingly dire warnings about the damage he may inflict on Iran. And that's been alarming conservative leaders as well as everybody else. It drew swift criticism and concern from many in Congress, with some raising legal issues and others defending his stance. Remember the ones who defend him. Remember those people. They are the dangerous ones. They are the ones who will lead you into oblivion. They always exist in any regime. There are always those bootlickers who will simply follow whatever the leader tells them. Will never question. We have one representing us right now. Speaking of Nick Lavoda, he's been on a lying kick lately. I don't know if you guys watch YouTube videos where Google inserts ads. Google lately has been inserting a whole lot of Nick Lavoda ads where he is making all kinds of wild claims. Actually, it's the American Action Network that is making these ads on his behalf. And basically making all kinds of false claims, you know, like Democrats pushed through the largest tax hike in history. Never happened. No mention of the tax cuts to the rich that didn't help anybody who was middle class or below. That Nick Lavoda was all for, and all kinds of other things that are just simply hypocritical and utter lies. Yeah, and you're forced to watch that if you want to get to a video. And I imagine they're on television as well. There's so much money being wasted on this, and people actually have been known to fall for it. Hopefully, less and less as things play out, as you start seeing how bad things are getting. I mean, yeah, we're looking at the price of fuel. That's a lot. We're looking at the price of all kinds of other things sometimes it's even more than that. Sometimes it's even kind of surprising. Like dental floss, for some reason, tripled in price. I don't understand why. But things like that are happening.
It adds up. It really adds up. So, I mean, that's not a trivial observation.
Does that come out of the Strait of Hormuz? I didn't know that. Dental floss.
Anyway. Think of logistics, like, alone with the costs for fuel that gets added on to just truck things places. Like, it just, it all eventually arrives at the consumer's feet.
Senator Ron Johnson, he is a Republican from Wisconsin. He's a staunch Trump ally. He said yesterday, "I'm hoping and praying this really is bluster. I do not want to see us start blowing up civilian infrastructure. I do not want to see that." Yeah, one of his staunch allies saying he doesn't want to see what Trump is promising. On Easter Sunday, Trump wrote Tuesday. That's today, by the way. Oh, in fact, if you don't know, he set the deadline for 8 p.m. tonight. So everything seems to happen with, you know, regards to when we're on. So, yeah, that gives us time to, you know, basically make a few drinks and sit back and wait to see what happens. Tuesday will be Power Plant Day, he promised on Sunday, and Bridge Day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Open the effing strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah. That might be the most offensive part, him saying that. You know, you have to ask yourself, you've bombed them. You've destroyed what you claim is their nuclear ambitions. What is it you want exactly? You know, the other day I heard him saying they won't say uncle. So this is it? You're literally the schoolyard bully, and you want the kid to say uncle, and you're just going to keep beating him until he does? Is that what this is about? Because, you know, many times I've seen Trump and realize, yeah, that's my schoolyard bully right there. That's exactly how they operated. That's exactly how they talked. That's exactly their mental capability. So is that it? Is that really what this is? Well, you know, they're never going to do that. They're never going to say, yes, we bow down to you. Doesn't work that way. You almost kind of, you know, want to take their side, even though you certainly don't want to take the side of the Ayatollahs. But I'll tell you what, you know, if you cause all of this damage to the country, you will unite the Iranian people, and it won't be on your side. It's about the dumbest thing you could possibly do, which I guess is what we should expect. Tucker Carlson. I'm just going through the names here. This is really crazy. He said that Trump's post was vile on every level. It begins with a promise to use the U.S. military, our military, to destroy civilian infrastructure in another country, which is to say to commit a war crime, a moral crime against the people of the country. Never agreed with Tucker Carlson more than that. I'm conflicted here because these are the people that, you know, have been on a diametrically opposed side, everything that we allegedly stand for here. And here I am agreeing with them. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tucker Carlson and you know, conservative senators. Okay, you know, I can accept that. I can work with that because you have to. When something happens like this, you need to make allies out of enemies if you want to win. You can hold on to the same differences and lose, or you can unite at least briefly. Get rid of the threat. Tucker Carlson said that destroying power plants would lead to the deaths of civilians, saying babies connected to incubators die. People in hospitals die. I don't know why it doesn't mean anything when we say it, but when he says it, people listen. I mean, in general, just, I guess because conservatives are saying this and they're starting to break with Trump. It took long enough, but okay, here we are. Alex Jones, Kyle. Alex Jones. I keep getting deeper into the weeds. Right-wing conspiracy theorist, former Donald Trump supporter, Alex Jones, is also calling for the 25th Amendment to be invoked. Yeah, this was during yesterday's episode of the Alex Jones Show. Why is that still on the air? I thought they got rid of that because he was a liar and a horrible person and basically had to pay everybody everything that he owned. No?
No, he filed for bankruptcy or something.
And he can continue doing his show. All right.
I don't know. I think he had to give up all the... Well, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's inconsequential. But you know what? I just, as you get to the third person here...
I'll stop.
It's not our job. It's their job at this point. They speak the language. Their dissent matters. And I think, you know, let them meet the conversation with their change of heart or whatever. I mean, I don't need to pick apart their logic or, talk about double standards where in other conflicts, other entities do this stuff.
There's time for that.
We get it that they're saying this at all, that they're pointing out that we've run astray. That's enough for me.
Uh-huh.
And, we've already bloviated as much as we possibly could, asking where are these people? Well, here they are. Here they are, and they're the people, exactly like you said, that we would not ordinarily agree with at all. I'm not here to really weigh in, because in a lot of ways, this is what we've been asking for, is people to wake up and wake others up. And as we've said, speak their language. We're the wrong messengers in a lot of ways, and have been, at least Democrats or independents or people that... haven't been on board with this, and I don't know that we're any better at conveying that dissent in ways that don't come across as wagging the finger and saying, you know, told you so. So that they're doing this, I'm fine with it. Happy to sit back and listen.
I'm not saying don't fight, because, you know, we'll have plenty of time to fight after this is over, and there will be a lot to fight about. But for now, we need to join forces and get rid of the threat. And I think we all agree what the threat is at this point.
Absolutely. Human collaboration, much so, like we were talking about in the last part of the
show. Alex Jones asked his former attorney, who was lawyer Robert Barnes, how do we 25th Amendment his ass? Which is a proper question, I think.
Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. Well, Barnes pointed out that it was harder to invoke the 25th Amendment than it was to impeach a president, to which Jones asked, so what do we do? And Barnes suggested tackle Trump and let him pretend he's president and publicly report that he's going through a health issue and Vance take over. It literally needs to be something like that. It's that bad. That's pretty stupid, but maybe that's the only option. I don't know.
I think by tackle he meant, like, contain.
Well, whatever. No, that would take a few people, but... basically calling for an internal coup. There are times when that is something that you need to do if you are in danger. And we're seeing more people basically reaching that conclusion. Based on recent events.
Yeah, not only in other countries, but in our own history. I mean, that is the recourse. I mean, you that's it. That's the framework for how to deal with these sorts of eventualities.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are plenty of other people in this administration who are raving lunatics and religious zealots as well. It's like we have the Taliban running the country right now. I don't know if you saw recent DHS, are they tweets or Truth Socials? I don't know what platforms they're using. But basically, it was just all this, he is risen, Jesus Christ, from the government. I mean, that's not what this country is supposed to be about. It's pretty clear. And they don't care. They have just basically taken over, and they are involved in Christian nationalism, which is a profound threat to democracy. The latest... comes with this guy who was basically shot down by the Iranians and was was missing for a couple of days. Everybody was looking for him. The Iranians were looking for him. The Americans were looking for him. Obviously, if the Iranians had caught him, it would have been a tremendous public relations coup for them. So the Americans were losing no effort in trying to track him down. And eventually they did find him and they rescued him. I'm happy about that. I don't like to see anybody suffer. I'm not happy about what he was doing there because, really, it doesn't make any sense at this point. But the thing that was craziest about all of this was how Hegseth decided to describe it all. He likened the rescue on Easter Sunday of the missing American airmen shot down over Iran to, get ready, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I am not kidding. Yeah, of course, Trump was there to back him up on that. He asserted that God supports the Israeli-U.S. war against Iran, which has killed thousands, including many civilians. His words, because God is good, and God wants to see people taken care of. And I guess he means that like Tony Soprano would mean that. Trump continued, God doesn't like what's happening. I don't like what's happening. Everyone says I enjoy it. I don't enjoy this. I don't like seeing people get killed. But he's going to do it anyway. Let's go back to Hegseth. In his account of the rescue operation, Hegseth drew parallels between the airmen's ordeal and the account of Christ's death and the resurrection given in the Bible. The F-15E fighter jet, he noted, was shot down on a Friday, Good Friday. That is the day Jesus was crucified. After the airman bailed out over Iran, he hid, Hegseth said, in a cave, a crevice, all Saturday, reminiscent of the tomb cut into a rock in which Jesus was buried. Then, he said, the airman was rescued on the day Christians celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, flown out of Iran as the sun was rising on Easter Sunday. A pilot reborn, all home and accounted for, a nation rejoicing, God is good. Okay, this level of psychosis is another threat to our nation, our democracy. Okay, so Hegseth also claims that the weapons system officer made contact with his American rescuers with a religious message, God is good. They're saying this a lot, God is good. In that moment of isolation and danger, his faith and fighting spirit shone through. First of all, not sure I believe anything he says, but, you know, if he did say that, fine. It's a good phrase to say, I guess. All this parallel to historic events. Well, why don't we just ask the Pope what he thinks about this? Because, boy, you're going to get an earful if you do that. But for some reason, that doesn't count. This was the latest example of the Secretary of Defense invoking Christian theology in public statements about the war with Iran. Earlier in the war, Hegseth asked Americans to pray for victory in the Middle East in the name of Jesus Christ. And Pope Leo XIV, who, of course, is a U.S.-born pope, has sharply disagreed with Trump administration's suggestions that the war has divine sanction. The Pope has repeatedly called for an end to the conflict and criticized the use of Christianity to justify warfare. In a recent homily, Leo said that the Christian mission had often been distorted by a desire for domination entirely foreign to the way of Jesus Christ. That's about as religious as I think we're going to get here on Off the Wall, but we are living in crazy-ass times. I mean, there's just no other way to phrase it.
That's a good way to phrase it.
I guess so. There is nothing the ugliness of this regime does not touch. The Holocaust Memorial Museum. Yeah. They have quietly fallen into line with the Trump administration. That's right. In the first year of Trump's second term, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington quietly removed from its website educational resources about American racism, and they canceled a workshop about the fragility of democracy. Those changes came as Trump cracked down on what he called corrosive ideology at the Smithsonian Institution, demanding a slew of alterations at the world's largest museum network, to more closely align its content with his world view. And they also coincided with the administration's efforts to remove content related to diversity, equity, and inclusion from federal websites. Unlike his posture toward the Smithsonian, Trump has not publicly commented on the Holocaust Museum's content or publicly called for any modifications. But, and this is the worst part, two former museum employees who left amid the changes told Politico they believed the museum was altering its content preemptively so as not to draw unwanted negative attention from the Trump administration. It seems like they were trying to proactively fall in line as to not then be forced to change. Think about this. If you run a museum about the Holocaust, about the evils of mankind that led to something like that, and you are intimidated to alter the way you tell the story, that is fear that I cannot even comprehend. You have such an important message. You know, you are trusted to share this history, and you're intimidated by a two-bit dictator to just shut up and say it a different way and not offend. It's kind of the whole point of the museum is to stand up against that kind of crap. And boy, that's about as sad as I can imagine. So yeah, it affects so many. It affects people. It affects institutions. It affects who we are. And you know where J.D. Vance is, Kyle?
No.
He's in Budapest. He is in Budapest. He's insisting.
Oh, I know why.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah.
This is the election.
There's an election coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, so he's like, he's fluffing Orban.
Yeah, the dictator of Hungary, who is a dictator, by the way, a right-wing fascist dictator. Got the notes to prove it. And the election is on Sunday. And he's there now to show support. It's disgusting because almost the entire European Union is embarrassed by this one member and the rightward turn they have, the extreme right turn they have taken, and just embracing fascism, hatred, anti-immigrant, anti-gay, anti-everything you could possibly imagine. But J.D. Vance is there not to criticize what Hungary is doing. He's there to criticize what the European Union is doing. He's basically accusing the European Union of interfering in the Hungarian election. While traveling over there to endorse the Prime Minister of Hungary in the election on Sunday. They don't even see it, do they? They don't even realize how crazy they look to go over there and say, you guys should stop interfering while I am interfering. You know, Hungary is in Europe, at least. They're not in the United States. Why the hell are you even over there? This is none of your business. You can argue it's none of the EU's business, but they're a member of the EU, so I don't know, maybe it is a little bit. So, his criticism of the EU came amid a full-throated endorsement of Viktor Orban, although he denied he was trying to boost the flagging campaign of the Kremlin-aligned leader, who has run Hungary for the past... Ready? For the past 16 years. You see, pro-Kremlin, all right? How long has Putin been in power? You know? Netanyahu... another evil person. How long has he been in power? Trump, how long does he want to be in power? There's a theme here. There are a lot of similarities. Let's let J.D. Vance continue, though, because it's funny. Now, I don't expect, of course, the people of Hungary to listen to the Vice President of the United States. That's not primarily why I'm here. Oh, do tell. Why are you really there? I did want to send a signal to everybody, particularly to the bureaucrats in Brussels, who have done everything that they can to hold down the people of Hungary because they don't like the leader who has actually stood up for the people of Hungary. And I think it's important to say that. Hang on a second. You flew all the way over to Budapest simply to say that Europe should be nicer to Viktor Orban. That's your contention. I mean, have you heard of telephones? Have you heard of satellites? You know, things like that. You didn't have to. You're the Vice President of the United States. Aren't there more important things for you to be doing? Man, what a dumbass. If you didn't know that. But I think you knew that, so I think you know exactly what you're doing. And what? They can't criticize? I mean, the guy's in power. So what is your accusation against them? They didn't prevent him from taking over the country. It's an ugly place now. And yeah, they did that in Hungary. It's a damn shame. And the EU has feelings about that, but they didn't stop it. Let's look at the United States, though. You don't like the way elections go in certain places? You just bomb the country, you know? Venezuela? Iran? I mean, may not be democratic countries, but the only reason you use is because, well, we can. We can. Cuba. Blockade. Why is there a blockade on Cuba? What did Cuba do recently? They're still Cuba. They're the same Cuba they've been. And for some reason, Trump is like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to take Cuba. So don't tell me the EU is up to no good here. You've got a lot to answer for. I don't know how those elections are going to go, but it's going to be an entertaining weekend. Hey, Splashdown is on Friday night. That's going to be fun. Looking forward to that, Kyle?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Hope everything goes well, and I hope the elections go well in Hungary as well. And I don't know what's going to happen tonight. We have just about an hour and 4 minutes before the deadline and before a civilization is wiped from the face of the earth, according to Donald Trump. I wish we didn't have to spend time talking about nonsense like this. But we do, because it's real.
Do you feel like tacos? I feel like tacos.
I've been told I look like a taco, but yeah, I do. I do, actually. Boy, do I ever. Hey, support WUSB. It's our radiothon. Please keep our voices going, because there's no other place that will let us speak. WUSB.fm is our website. And on that website, you will find a button that says Pledge. And that means you can pledge your support to WUSB and keep this radio station going, non-commercial, all the time, independent thought. It's such a rarity these days. Such a threat. Hey, we're going to go out with a song. I remember this being a hit in the 70s, but it actually came out in the 60s. And was, I guess, just brought back because of all the moon missions that took place. It's by a guy named Jonathan King. And it's a rarity. You don't hear it very often. So we're going to say goodnight to everybody.
For Emmanuel, this is Kyle.
And
for Kyle, this is Emmanuel.
Exactly. And let's go to the moon.
Roads full of houses, never home. Church full of singing, out of tune. Everyone's gone to the moon. Eyes full of sorrow. Never. of money, all in bed. Sun coming out in the middle of June. Everyone's gone to the moon. Long time ago, life has begun. Everyone went to the sun. Hearts full of roses, painted green. Mouths full of chocolate, covered cream. Arms that can only lift a spoon. Everyone's gone to the moon. Everyone's gone to the moon. Everyone's gone to the moon.